From ACB Radio Mainstream, welcome to Tuesday Topics. For the next hour, we will be discussing a topic of interest to blind and visually impaired people. And now, from Miami, Florida, the host of Tuesday Topics, Paul Edwards.
Well, it is another Tuesday evening in Miami, Florida, and this is Paul Edwards welcoming everyone to Tuesday Topics. Thank you very much for being with us. I would like, as usual, to thank my producer, Brian Charlson, and my editor extraordinaire, Steve Bauer, for their hard work making Tuesday Topics happen. Brian is going to be more than just the producer tonight. He's actually going to be our featured guest, and we're going to talk about something that you'll find out about soon. But before we find out what we're going to talk about, let me also thank George Byes of Talking Communities, who has made this software available that allows Tuesday Topics to happen. This evening, we're actually going to talk for a few moments, or more than a few moments, about the GPS systems that are currently out there for blind people. By my count, there are five, with the promise of a sixth. Though we'll see if my guest, Mr. Charlson, agrees with that. And maybe, Brian, that's actually a place to start. Maybe you could review the current crop of GPSs that are out there. And I get to five by counting both of the HumanWare standalone products. So I'm including the Breeze, as I think I should, because it's a fundamentally different device from the Trekker. So that's how I get to five. So perhaps you could go through the group and also let me know if in fact you think I'm right, or have I missed something that's appeared out of the darkness. The one that I'm expecting, because they keep saying it'll be available before the end of the year, is the GPS system that will work with cell phones that's being, I guess, developed for someone by Sendero. So, what's out there, Mr. Charlson?
Well, first I should tell people that my interest in GPS happened as a result of my occupation. I run the computer training services program at the Carroll Center for the Blind. I've been working there for the past 23 years, and was at one point a PacMate user, and had the opportunity to get a cut rate on the GPS system available for the PacMate called StreetTalk. However, I've moved on from the PacMate, and as part of that process, I got an opportunity to use the Trekker and the GPS from Sendero on the BrailleNote family of products that you mentioned a moment ago. So between those three, we're starting to add up here. The fourth one you mentioned, the Trekker Breeze, which is about to come out in a version 2. It'll be physically the same, but with some added features to it. And then lastly, the one you mentioned, Paul. And I say lastly, there is at least two different now cell phone or mobile phone based GPS systems, but I've only had use of one of them up to this point, and it is called the Geo. This is the one you're referring to, Paul, that was developed by the folks at Sendero for use on phones that have mobile speak in them. So it's being distributed by, oh Lord, I'm going to forget their name again. Code Factory. There we go. Code Factory of Spain. So those would be the five units that I'm familiar with and have had some use of over the years.
You're missing one. There is also another Sendero version that's available for the VoiceSense line of products. So for the VoiceSense and the BrailleSense Plus, these are note takers made by HIMS in Korea and distributed through GW Micro here in the U.S. So that's the other one. I didn't know that Code Factory's Geo was actually released yet, so that's exciting news. And is somebody developing a GPS for the other major program, Tox, so that there will actually be competing GPS cell phone systems?
I know that there is a product currently being used in Europe that is based on the Symbian phone line or capabilities. But I don't think it's being distributed in the United States right now, and I'm not sure that it is dependent on a particular screen reader for a cell phone line, or whether it is itself self-voicing. I can't really give you an honest answer to that question. You know, I didn't mention the voice sense slash braille sense, because I kind of think of that strictly as a version rather than a totally separate product. I guess one can make the same argument that since Sendero is the one behind the Geo, that it's just a variation of the Sendero product as well. But the very fact that it's on a cell phone and it has some features that simply can't be done on any of the existing PDAs makes me think that perhaps it should be in a class of its own.
I also think that it's probably appropriate for us to count the BrailleSense VoiceSense products as a separate one too, because they're actually substantially different. Or at least as I read them, they're substantially different. Now I haven't kept up, I'll learn to speak, with the very latest versions of the Braille Note Senderos. So they may have some of the same features. But what I noticed in looking at the manuals for the VoiceSense and the BrailleSense versions of the Sendero products is that they seemed a lot more intuitive than the Braille Note product did, and there were a lot of single key or single letter features that were introduced with that, so that you don't have to use corded commands as much as you do in the Braille Note family of products.
Well, if you were to divide up the products that are out there, what kind of features differentiates one product from another? Perhaps you could make a point on that. You know, because the operating systems are so different between the Braille Note family and the Braille Sense family, it would be hard to put a product, even the same product, on both of them without having to make some pretty major modifications to make them fit into the look and feel of the host product.
Yep. So how much time do we want to spend on the Breeze? Let me start with a couple of comments just to kind of put it in context, and then let you talk about perhaps what you know about version 2. The Breeze product was originally shown this summer at the consumer conventions by Humanware, and it is intended to be a less expensive GPS alternative than the others. The original Breeze sold for $895, but for many people who looked at it, it was a product that seemed to us to be inferior. It was intended and designed to be used by people who didn't need some of the complex features that were available as part of the Trekker. But and I think that they felt that it would be easier to learn to use, and that more older people or more people who were less tech-oriented would use it. A lot of us who looked at it had the feeling that there were some features that we would regard as very basic and very important that weren't included in the Trekker Breeze. And one of those things was, at that point, the ability to fully map a route, or the ability to have the device actually develop a set of instructions for you that would get you from where you are to where you want to go in an orderly fashion. So many of us felt that made the Breeze a device that we weren't sure would be as useful to a lot of the people who would really be able to optimize their use of the Breeze. So maybe you could comment on my comments, Brian. Do you think they're accurate? And second, would you like to comment about version 2 and what you know about it?
You know, today I presented to a group of 25 or so orientation and mobility instructors from across Massachusetts Some of them worked with children their entire career. Some of them worked with adults for their entire career. Some of them were brand new orientation mobility instructors, less than 2 years in the field. And some of them had 40 years in the field. And we looked over these different versions, and the word on everybody's lips was Trek or Breeze. And the reason that that was the case was precisely the things that you discussed a moment ago. One, the device is a custom-built device. So instead of having to have a PDA from one manufacturer, software from another, a slide over the top, modification from a touch screen to a keyboard kind of an approach, a GPS from yet another manufacturer, and a little, what can I call it? I'll call it a speaker for lack of a better term, though its miniaturization makes it seem to be more impressive than that. All of these things from different manufacturers. Instead, it's all in one box and makes for a much cleaner training. Certainly, if I were loaning such things out, I would always be happier loaning out a single part that works all together in one integrated way than multiple parts. I never get multiple parts returned to me the way I sent them out. Its simplicity is part of its charm. So you've got this box you hang around your neck or whatever. You turn it on and you start walking. And as you walk, it announces things as you walk down the street. It announces the street you're on, the streets you're crossing, the addresses, the businesses at the time that the unit was issued, these kinds of things. So it very much is like having somebody sit on your shoulder and read you the signs as you go along. You're right, Paul, in that it doesn't create routes or allow for the creation of routes in the way that the big boys do. Specifically, the only way that you can create a route is by actually telling it to record your walk as you're going from point A to point B. You can then store that and retrieve that for future use. You can also invert it so that you can retrace your steps if that's your desire. But again, you can't enter an address, select an address from a list of points of interest, and say create a route between the two. You have to literally walk it and record your walk. That's not all a bad thing, because if you were an O&M instructor, you could say, well, I've got a college student who's coming up to Berklee School of Music, and that's a crazy campus trying to get from point A to point B. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to, as an O&M instructor, take this box, and I'm going to walk a few routes that I want my student to be able to quickly traverse. They're going to be here on Friday, and classes start on Monday, and I can hand them this device, knowing that they've already got O&M training, but not perhaps orientation to this campus, and they can still get around from place to place on campus. There's probably a place in this universe for that kind of simplicity, if you will. I personally wouldn't own one, and I wouldn't own one simply because it's the extras that I find the most useful in my life. But I can certainly see why having everything in a single box and having to step over the things you don't intend to use the simple things that you want a GPS for, has some value to it as well. So you were asking what the difference is between the existing Breeze and the beta Breeze. As there's only really one major difference, and that has to do with allowing for both an automobile view of the universe and a walking view of the universe, so that if you were taking paratransit or a bus or a train someplace, as long as you didn't go underground during the course of your transit, that you could feel part of that process and help make decisions when you're riding with a taxi or letting the bus driver know where you want to get off, that kind of thing. That's really the only significant difference in the beta version.
So let's move beyond the machines to perhaps a more relevant question. What should blind people expect a GPS system to do, in your opinion? That is, we've made a decision to buy a GPS system. What would impel us to want to do that? And what kinds of specific things does a GPS system enable a blind person to do?
Well, I think the first and foremost is, as I mentioned with the Breeze, the ability for a device to tell you where you are at any given time, to tell you where you are relative to streets and intersections, relative to addresses, also to give you an indication of which direction you're going, northeast, southwest, these kinds of things, is also quite useful. So I would say number one is, where am I information? I don't really think that it's necessary for me to know my coordinates, latitude, and longitude for most purposes until I get off the grid of streets that is the city I live in. Knowing the latitude and longitude of the corner of Grandview Avenue and Copeland Streets is not very valuable. If I, on the other hand, were out as part of the Carroll Center's Sailed Blind program and I could use that information to navigate during a sailing regatta, then it might have some value. But again, I don't feel that I need to step over that information so that some people can have that. I'd like that to be turn off, turn on kind of scenario. The same thing is true for altitude. I don't know of any of these units who won't tell you how much above sea level you are at a given time. I suppose there's times along the Texas coast already this hurricane season that knowing your elevation might be useful, but I can honestly tell you that once you get above 300 feet, it's kind of a useless piece of information for the most part. Again, I don't want to have to step over it to get access to that kind of information. And next is the issue of speed. Again, most of these devices will tell you how fast you're traveling. Fascinating information. If I was wearing a pedometer, it would tell me that too, I suppose. So it's not a bad thing, but again, not something that I want to have to step over to find out which direction I'm going and how far it is to the next corner. So that would be the number one thing. Where am I information? As much as you'd like to know or as little as you'd like to know. I would think that is the number one thing that it can do for us.
Okay, so where am I helps. You talked a little while ago about a thing called a point of interest. Maybe you could help us understand what that animal is, because that's one of the things that I think both the non-adapted GPS systems and the current group of systems do a pretty good job on, and I guess I would rate that for me as either the number one or the number two thing that I would want to have on my GPS system.
Point of interest is an interesting thing. Just like the name suggests, these are points on a map that would be of interest to an individual moving around a particular community. Points of interest typically are categorized to make it easier for you to wade through all the potential points of interest. So you could first select whether you want to look at restaurants, or you want to look at gas stations, or you want to look at museums, schools, bus stops, whatever. So they're categorized. And once you open that category, you can then take a look at them relative to your position. And in fact, most of the systems ask you to indicate whether you not want these points of interest pointed out to you based on, you know, as little as a half a mile from where you're standing to as much as, say, a 15-mile radius, 20-mile radius. Of course, the bigger the radius, the more you're going to glean. The more you glean, depends on whether or not you're really interested in walking that distance or not. Again, it's stuff you need to step over. The points of interest are not just what's near you, but where it is relative to you. Is it north, south, east, or west? And what's the distance from where you are standing? It also can give you information such as address and phone number. In some databases, that can extend to a web address as well, if published at the time that the map was created. And in fact, it's this question of when the map was created that plays a big part in differentiating one GPS system from another. They all utilize mapping information from mainstream companies. If you were to use the Trekker, and I think the McElroys use a Trekker, the Trekker GPS gets a set of maps from the same location that Google Maps gets its maps. Now that sounds like a good thing, and generally speaking it is, as long as you continuously update your maps. I had a gentleman today talk about his Trekker, and he has a Trekker that's a couple of years old. And in his community, the maps have not been updated in some time. In fact, he can point a specific case where it claims that there's a restaurant in a location where that restaurant left 30 years ago. So the data is one of those garbage in, garbage out scenarios. If they haven't been maintained, points of interest are more frustrating than they are useful. A couple of quickie stories dealing with points of interest. When I was down at the ACB convention in Orlando a while back, I think it was an ACB convention. Anyway, I decided to go over for dinner over along the riverway and used the GPS to get me from the hotel over to the restaurant. Was traveling with a bunch of other people who happened to all be female. And we chose to go to a place, I think it was called the American Grill or something like that. When we arrived outside of the restaurant, there certainly was sounds of restaurants and people having a good time and the like. And we sent one of our, actually our youngest member, in to make a reservation for us since it looked pretty crowded. And when she came out, she was furious because I had just sent her into Hooters Restaurant. And she was quite embarrassed over that. Well, it turned out that the GPS hadn't failed me, but rather it hadn't indicated that the American Grill was directly over Hooters, and we were standing very close to a flight of stairs that would take us up to that restaurant, and that's where we ate that day. In the same way, I was in New York City looking for a coffee shop, found one, and it insisted that I had arrived there, and I asked people around me where it was, and none of them saw it anywhere around. Turned out that it was below my feet in Penn Station. So GPS does not deal with this, it's over your head, it's under your feet scenario either. So those are two big issues of published points of interest. Publishing is an important part of this, though, because you can create your own points of interest, and that really makes the product useful to an individual. You could go down and know you're at the bus stop and put that as a point of interest. And the bus stops that you use, you can simply get to them and indicate them to the device, and you'll find it easy to get back to them in the future. And more importantly, easier to create a route from where you are to one of those points of interest that you've created. Some services or systems are trying to use social networking to expand their points of interest. The Sendero product, for example, allows individuals to create points of interest as a group and then put them up on the web and allow others to download them and add them to their own set of points of personal interest. So under those circumstances, I think there's some real value to that. I guess the last thing I'd say about point of interest is the quality of the GPS also can be determined by your ability to edit them. If they're there, you know they're wrong, you can create a new point of interest at that restaurant and say what's now there, but every time you go along that street, it's going to announce that 30-year-old restaurant and your new point of interest as being in the same locale. Trying to scrub out that old unwanted data is significant ability of any point of interest feature within any of the GPS systems.
I think there are a couple of ways that that I use points of interest that are maybe worth talking about. Three ways, in fact. One of them was with the Trekker, which I had the opportunity to use for a somewhat extended period of time. I actually did a lot of mapping on my campus, so had created points of interest at the entrances to all of the major buildings on my campus. And that's actually no mean feat, because the campus is pretty large and it's getting bigger all the time. Right now there are either 11 or 12 buildings, and these are major buildings. There are also some smaller ones, and virtually all of them ended up getting mapped so that if you were walking with the Trekker, it would actually tell you when you came abreast of a building and made getting around campus a lot easier, because the full list of points of interest simply wasn't available, certainly at that time, that included all the buildings on my campus. And that would be a good example of a custom point of interest creation exercise that might be of benefit to other GPS users who decided they wanted to come to my campus and go to school. The other way that I used the points of interest was, of course, to find out where restaurants were in relation to me, because even if I wasn't going to walk to a restaurant, I might very well have been tempted to, say, take a cab to one if I discovered one that looked appealing that was relatively close. And of course, the other way that that we used points of reference, points of interest all the time, was when we traveled, because most of the devices, perhaps with the exception of the Breeze, has quite a lot of room for other information that's contained on different sets of state maps. And so if you know you're going to be traveling to a particular place, you can load points of interest, individually created points of interest, and the maps, which would then enable you to put in your location as, say, the place that you're staying in this new city. And a lot of those areas, just as you did, I've spent some time looking at what restaurants appear to be close by and making choices before I ever leave the room, and sometimes even calling those restaurants, because, as you say, virtually all the points of interest will list a phone number if one's available for a point of interest, which enables one to actually check with the restaurant and say, are you guys gargantuanly busy? Is the wait 3 hours, or what's going on? Before I actually even leave the hotel. And having that information, and I think we should probably stress this, having that information can be really helpful, and in particular organized the way that it is. You could go to a computer and often get the same information, but it would depend a lot on whether the computer listings of restaurants were as completely and carefully done as the points of interest on a device such as a GPS. And what's really nice is that they are done by distance rather than, say, an alphabetical order where you have to sort through and try to figure out where they are. When you ask it to bring up restaurants, say, within a 2 mile radius, it's going to list all of those, and the very first one that's going to list is the one that's closest to you, and the last one is the one that's at the limit that you set for the GPS, which might be 2 miles or 3 miles or 4 miles. Certainly feel free to comment on any other points that I might have left out on points of reference, but I'm fascinated by the fact that you spoke to a large group of orientation mobility instructors. Did you get the impression that they saw GPS training as an inherent part of their jobs in the first place? And in the second place, did you get the impression that a lot of them felt pretty comfortable with training using that technology? What do you think?
Well, this was a meeting that was supposed to actually be six O&M instructors who work as part of our community mobility department, and they decided that the subject might be of interest to a couple of other people, so they opened it up to invitation, and then we had 25 present. So clearly they're interested in the subject. We had people with all kinds of backgrounds and doing all kinds of jobs currently, and all of them are, I would use the word, concerned about GPS and their ability to assist people in its use. Just in the same way that parents say, well, my kids know how to use a computer better than me, a lot of the O&M instructors out there feel that their clients actually know how to use the technology much better than they do, and when the client asks them to help them learn to use it out on a route or whatever, they don't feel themselves qualified by training or experience to assist them very effectively. We talked about the kinds of things that could change that. And again, picking on the Trekker Breeze, we thought that probably it would be best for agencies that have sufficient numbers of O&M instructors to justify the investment ought to buy a Breeze and have their O&M instructors feel comfortable in its use and use it as a tool to evaluate an individual's ability to deal with the extra input while out walking streets with a dog or a cane. So we came to the conclusion that that is an appropriate thing to expect an O&M instructor to be able to do, to introduce the concept of GPS and to evaluate a student's current readiness from an O&M perspective to use GPS as an additional tool for orienting themselves to their walking area. The second thing that I thought was interesting was, as a class, and I'm talking about, like I said, out of 25, probably 23 felt this way, that they were fairly computer Luddites. They had never truly individually embraced computers. They used them a little bit to write reports, but they really weren't computer enthusiasts by any means. Again, in a party of 25, 23, I think would have defined themselves in that way. So we have some issues. It's orientation and mobility instructors that are called upon to come show people around their neighborhood, their place of employment, their new school, whatever. Those individuals need to be competent enough in the issues of GPS to be able to provide professional advice, perhaps not on which device would best suit you as an individual, but at least the nature of what the devices are, and to assist in evaluating the appropriateness of you using any of these devices, if you will, that what's the threshold of usability that they should be involved in terms of making recommendations. Now, when the people who did use GPS a little bit with some of their clients, most of them were not involved in that client getting a GPS in the first place. They were just sent out, this person already had a GPS, and they had to deal with it. Most of the individuals had the GPSs provided by the system, that is, the rehabilitation system, their employer, something along those lines, which I found amazing because that's not been my experience in the friends that I know who have GPSs. They're almost always purchased by the individual. But nonetheless, that was the experience that these folks had with GPS. I had two people after the meeting was over come over and said, maybe what we need to do is to establish a summer 1-week-long institute on GPS for O&M instructors. And during that time, they'd be exposed to all of them, but the focus would be on evaluating a client's readiness to use GPS and to observe an individual already using GPS to make recommendations on how they can do that more safely and a bit more effectively. So I think that we're going to actually push for that through our university prep program out here in Massachusetts and see where we can go with it.
I think that that seems like a pretty effective way forward. I guess I didn't quite elicit the answer to the question that I was really looking for, and that was, and you may not know it, do you have any idea to what degree GPSs seem to be becoming mainstream training elements for O&M instructors based on the 25 folks that you saw today? And do you think their expectations for the devices are different from those of blind people?
I believe they feel that GPS will become part of their jobs. It hasn't as of yet, but they're feeling that they need to be ready for when it reaches, if you will, critical mass and becomes simply a given in things. And there's a particular entity out there who's kind of forcing their hand at this point, and that entity is the Department of Veterans Affairs. The VA is issuing GPS units to veterans, blinded vets. And they're almost always going out to hire O&M instructors to teach these individuals, have been for years and years and years. And now they're going to say, not only do we want you to teach them orientation and mobility skills, but we want you to teach them the GPS as well. So they're going to kind of have their backs against the wall. The real issue here is, do we teach the O&M instructor to use the most popular GPS systems? Will they use them often enough to keep their skills up? What does this add to the whole issue of safety and liability for the O&M instructor when the individual is listening to a wee voice in their ear as they're walking along and they aren't all that confident as O&M instructors in the use of this device, and now their student gets hurt while using one? Things along those lines. Big issues for them. I do think that O&M instructors look at these devices differently than my friends who use them look at these devices. We, generally speaking, as users, don't use all features of the device any more than I use all features of my laptop or my PDA. I don't use all the features of a GPS device. I use that that meets my needs and that seems to me to be natural to use, easy enough to use, to incorporate it in just the daily O&M requirements. Instructors or O&M instructors feel that they really need to master devices in order to give any advice on them at all, and to do any training on them, they have to have mastered them beginning to end. I don't think there's any client out there who feels that that's particularly necessary. The other thing is, O&M instructors would love it if our GPS devices were only GPS devices. When they start to be PDAs with note-taking and audio recording and databases and calendars and the like, that just gets them more and more nervous, and they only want to focus on the GPS functionality of a device, and almost never are they issued out as just like, nobody's going to get a Braille note because it has GPS. They're going to get a Braille note because it is first and foremost a PDA, and they're going to add GPS to it. This may all change, and this is probably part of the reason why they will find it more easy to adopt the Breeze rather than one of the other GPS devices or systems that are specifically married to a full-fledged PDA.
So now we've at least got a picture of orientation and mobility instructors kind of poised to do training, willing to do training, perhaps even eager to do training. Do you know of a lot of material that's out there that tells O&M instructors how they should train people who are blind to use GPS systems?
I know there's an effort out there to create more material to do just this kind of thing. LeaderDog now has a program where one can come and be taught the use of a GPS system. They have a curriculum for doing that. They encourage O&M instructors to come to them and learn how to use the Trekker GPS system, both with guide dog users and with cane users. But generally speaking, there's not enough written about it yet. Everybody kind of thinks, well, all they got to do is pick it up and learn to use it, and that will be sufficient for them to learn how to best teach it. And I'm not a believer in that at all. And I don't think any professional instructors feel that way. I'm talking about people with teaching degrees. That just because you know Braille doesn't make you a good Braille instructor. Well, just because you know how to use GPS doesn't make you necessarily a good GPS instructor either. I know that when I started talking about this institute idea, the O&M instructors who were there were quite keen on the idea, and none of them knew of anybody who's doing anything like it at this point. That doesn't mean it doesn't exist, but these are fairly well-connected O&M instructors. Many of them will, you know, were out at the AER conference in Chicago. Many of them will be up at the local AER conference in November up in New Hampshire. They go to things. They're not in isolation out there, and yet they haven't heard of anybody really working on a institute or curriculum to teach O&M instructors how to most effectively do this.
From ACB Radio Mainstream, you are listening to Tuesday Topics. If you have comments about the show or a suggestion of a topic you would like to have discussed, send a message to TuesdayTopics@acbradio.org. That's TuesdayTopics@acbradio.org. Once again, the host of Tuesday Topics, Paul Edwards.
Well, let's open it up and see if some other folks have some questions for Brian.
Brian, it's Steve Bauer from Wichita, Kansas. I'm a cane user, and I find even when I am walking in familiar areas in, say, the office buildings, there are three of them that are connected together where I work, I don't even like to walk, again, using a cane, and talk on the cell phone. To me, it's so distracting. And how do people who use GPS deal with the distraction level that would occur with such a device?
You know, you probably saw on the lists and the like that Sendero was hosting a number of GPS weekends in cities around the country. And I talked to a couple of O&M instructors who went to one or more of them, and the biggest concern they have about GPS is not whether or not it's a useful tool, but why is it that so many people who have really quite good cane skills or guide dog using skills switch them off when they switch on the GPS? It draws their focus away from what they know to do to such a degree that it really concerns the O&M instructors. This is why one of the most important features in any device, we know this with talking computers, is how to shut it up. Some means of saying, this kind of information I want to know this time, but normally I don't want to. As I'm walking along the street, do I want to hear every address? No. If I'm just walking along for an evening stroll or whatever, as long as I know the street I'm walking along and the street I'm crossing, then that's enough information for me. I don't need to know every house number. On the other hand, if I'm going down the street and I'm looking for a particular point of interest, it would be nice to be able to say, I don't want you to give me directions to it. I know generally where it is. But when I get within a certain number of feet of it, let me know it's there. And I'll just walk in that general direction. It's just kind of a last-minute tug on the sleeve to come over this direction. That kind of thing. I do think that it can be very distracting. One of the things I find really interesting, I'm reaching over to my desk over here and picking up my cell phone. I recently bought an SMT 5800 smartphone, a Verizon customer, and I needed to stick with smartphones rather than Symbian phones because Verizon doesn't support Symbian phones at this point. Anyway, this device, I put MobileSpeak into it as my screen reader for my cell phone, and I just put the Geo product on it first thing this morning. And boy, that's another whole other topic, is how complicated it is to put GPS on any of these devices. But one of the interesting features of this, Steve, is that you can cause it to communicate with you not orally, but through vibrations. It can utilize a dot dash kind of an approach to give you predetermined signals by vibrating in your pocket as to whether or not at the next intersection you want to turn right or left. So I think that they are thinking about ways to communicate with us between the GPS device without all of that nattering in the air. It is an acquired skill, and the number one thing I would think that O&M instructors would have to evaluate about an individual before actually recommending to a VR agency that an individual be issued one of these devices.
This is Dave McElroy. The Trekker is probably the one device that you would buy for the GPS first and the PDA second. And I think the reason for that is price point. Again, the Trekker is a reasonably priced piece of equipment in and of itself. And the other items appear to be as much of an add-on as anything, the Maestro suite of systems. So I would think for that, in that particular piece of equipment, I know Pam was thinking of the GPS capabilities first when she purchased it. As to knowing, you know, paying attention to it versus paying attention to your mobility skills, I would have to say that if we are going to state that people will pay more attention to their equipment than they do to their mobility, then we also must be willing to adopt the NFB philosophy that accessible traffic signals are an impedance rather than help. I don't think we want to go there, because I think most of us know that the audible traffic signal is simply that. It's an addition. It is an addendum to our mobility experience. This is the same with Trekker. Trekker is an addendum. Trekker is an addition to what we already have. It is not a substitution. It is not a. It's not a substitution. It's just an addition to it. If you don't use it that way, then I think you have that. Maybe speaks to mobility issues that are beyond the scope of this issue. But I do think that to my mind, and I haven't really used the others, I haven't looked at the others specifically, but to my mind, the Trekker pretty much has the best of both worlds. The things that Brian talks about not wanting, you don't have to have. You don't have to invoke unless you push the proper button. But On the other hand, it's still you have it there. And yes, in California, you want elevation. If you're going up in the mountains, and you know, or even in New Hampshire or somewhere, you want the elevation when you want it. When you want it there, it's a good thing to have. And it's not totally accurate either. It tells me my mother's house is 36 feet below sea level when it's on the beach. So you know, it's not perfect for me. Trekker is a nice addition, but it is a nice addition, and hopefully they will get better.
Hello, everyone. This is Gary Wood from Lansing, Michigan. I looked at a Trekker. I don't have any GPS now, but I've looked at one and tried it out, and the Trekker Maestro. And I think I agree with Dave. I think it's a nice product. It is an addendum. I think it probably complements your mobility skills and things. I wouldn't necessarily want to know what every house on the block was, unless, I mean, you should be able to control what you want it to tell you.
David, I want to be clear that what I was expressing with respect to the distraction, if you will, of GPS is an observation that a group of O&M instructors had in seeing one of these group activities. Everybody in the group had a GPS. Everybody said, all right, we're going to go from point A to point B. Let's switch on our GPSs and off we go. And they were just amazed at people they saw and worked with for years that they were not following their dog when their dog was guiding. They were not clearing properly the way they did 5 minutes before they turned on the device. So this was their argument in favor of teaching GPS, the proper use of it. Steve, you mentioned you can't imagine walking down the hall while using your cell phone, and yet we see people doing that kind of thing all the time. In fact, I saw a presentation at an AER regional conference of O&M instructors who monitored students during the course of 2 or 3 months, and how many of them were way before their O&M skills were up to the task, and probably, in their opinion, and I think in mine, never is it appropriate to be walking and talking. I've seen blind friends walk O&M-wise with a cane or a guide dog while talking on the cell phone while making the decision when it's safe to cross a street. That amazes me. Even when I am talking while walking down a street, the minute I get to an intersection, I tell the person, hold on a second, I'm crossing the street, and the phone goes away from my head. I do my O&M thing, make the decision to cross or not, cross, and bring the phone back up to continue the conversation. But never would I ever think about using a cell phone while crossing the street. Yet, you and I both know people do those kinds of crazy things. So, we're just talking about whether or not an O&M instructor might want to include in his or her training people how to use the devices effectively, when it's appropriate to be listening, when it's not, how to control how much it talks, and when to be most effective. So I'm curious, you guys use the Trekker, Dave. Do you use it every time you go out of the house, or do you only use it when you're expecting to be in areas that you're unfamiliar with? How do you use it in your daily life?
Okay, I stepped on the mic first, but I will answer. We both use them. We share them is what has happened. We don't use it every day, but we do use it often enough. And if one of us is going one place, we may he may take it or I may take it. So, you know, and well, this is an interesting thing. Where are you going? Do you know your location well enough that if I'm going someplace where I don't know my area well, I know where I need to go, but I don't necessarily know what street I'm on. If that's the case, then I might take it, and you might just go without it. So we kind of share it. And I think that the idea of the dog or the cane and the GPS is the same thing. You don't say, dog, take me to the store. At least not unless you've been working with dog for many years. I think you two are not as far apart as you might think. You have to have good mobility skills in order to effectively use a GPS.
The one place where we really found it great, I found it great, was when we went to Sequoia National Park up in the mountains, and we were able to get roughly from we had to make, it was all free mode up there in this parking lot, so we had to make points of interest, and that worked out really nicely, because it could say you are some, you know, 300 feet from this direction from point, you know, POI 15, it called itself. And we knew roughly where to go, so that was a nice use of it. It's a nice little addition to an arsenal that I would say has to depend, Brian, like you said, on all of your skills.
I guess I'd add one thing to Steve Bauer's issue, which we've kind of ended up discussing some, the whole issue of distractibility. I think manufacturers recognize that that's an issue, and one of the things that they're actually working on are ways of getting information in a manner that isn't as distracting and that still leaves you free to have the use of both of your ears and get good stereo listening to your environment. And one of those ways is Sendero this summer was selling some special headphones. Brian, I don't know if you bought any, but some special headphones that actually don't attach to your ears, but attach to kind of the bone behind your ear, I think. I didn't actually see them. So if you did, Brian, want to comment a little on them, I think it might be useful for our folks to know something about those. And the whole idea of them was that it keeps your ears clear and enables you to still get information, but also allows you to have a good, clear sense of where you are and what you're doing.
I heard about those earphones, but didn't get a chance to actually try a pair out. I use my hearing a lot. You know, we use this term over at the Carroll Center called vidiation, which is taking all of the sensory input that you're getting, tactile, visual, auditory, and putting them together into kind of a where am I kind of image as well. So blocking off any one of those things, I know when I wear a hood during the winter time, it affects how fast I'm willing to travel because I'm not getting that side echoing. That's part of how I build that map for myself. So I do think that there's a chance that used wrong, a choice of the wrong kind of equipment and the like, based on your hearing abilities, all those kinds of things put together, means that you really have to be careful as you're shopping. I'm going to backtrack for a moment because Dave made a comment earlier I wanted to ask him a question about, and anybody else certainly can chime in here. You said that you felt that the Trekker, Dave, was good value for money or something to that effect. Has it ever bothered you that when we talk about GPS for the blind, we're talking some serious change, while the last time I bought a mainstream GPS device for a family member, it was under $300?
Brian, that question has a couple of answers in terms of me. First of all, I did not put out the money for it. Pam did. She bought that. What I said it was a good value for the money, I meant in relation to the Street Talk or the Sendero, assuming you had to also buy a PDA. When Pam bought the Trekker, she did not own a PDA. I've never owned one of the PDAs and still do not. She was considering buying she bought a Braille sensor at the time, which did not at that time have any kind of usability for navigation. Would I have bought it myself? To be quite honest, probably not. I mean, if Pam hadn't purchased it, I'm not sure I'd have one today, to be honest with you. It's kind of helpful when we're out of town, where we go to my stepmother's home in Ventura and walk from the places like that. It's helpful, but it's not undoable to not have it. I don't know what an effective price point is. Like you, I am really, really upset at the fact that, yeah, a good GPS will cover, it will be $300 and less for the mainstream. I don't know what the answer is.
I think that mobility has really taken on another life of its own, you know, with the GPS thing. And it sounds like a pretty good thing to use. You can't forget your other mobility skills, but, I mean, if you're going to use GPS, you still need to keep those up.
A couple of questions I'm going to throw out. I'm very cognizant of the time, Paul, that we're running late on this show, but it's a couple of questions, and let's not answer them tonight because I don't think we have the time, but stop and think about these, if you will. price is one object, why isn't there a company out there trying to adapt the existing GPS than building a for-the-blind GPS? Two, who should be paying for them? Most of the people I know have bought them themselves. Under what circumstances ought rehab to pay for GPS as an adaptive tool? If somebody is a traveling salesman, then I suppose it would be literally a vocational tool. But if they are going to be used by individuals as VR clients to get to and from work, is that as valuable a tool, an ability? If they couldn't get there without the GPS, is the GPS getting them to the job, you know, a useful thing? And I guess the other one is, at what point are we weakening our skills? Yeah, I know, David, I'm getting back to that whole audible traffic signal thing again. But, you know, I think about all of my friends who have become more and more dependent on paratransit, who take paratransit from point A to point B, even though there's a bus that goes point A to point B. You know, I know, I like convenience. I took paratransit out to the ball game the other night because I would have had to leave work early to do it any other way, and I would have had to pay $40 each way to take a cab there. You know, those other variables played a part in my decision. But nonetheless, when you start to use GPS, are you in fact leaning on technology to a point like kids lean on calculators to do math, that kind of stuff? Not saying that is the case, but it's an interesting thing to think about as we talk about the impact of GPS on our lives. I would like to suggest that if there's anybody out there who listens to this show on ACB Radio rather than here live with us, you might want to respond to those questions and anything else that you've heard here this evening by sending a message to us. And our email address, Paul, is?
Our email address is TuesdayTopics, that's TuesdayTopics, at acbradio.org. And if we actually hear from a number of people who are current GPS users who'd like to get into some discussion of the questions that Brian raised at the end of this program, we'd love to hear from you. Go to Radio Shack, buy a $10 mic, come on the show, and tell us about your GPS experiences. I'd like to thank Dave and Pam McElroy for sharing their experiences with us as well, and certainly our perennial sidekick, Gary, who is with us this evening. And I'm sorry, it's Dave McElroy and Pam Drake. I'd like to thank everyone for listening. I'd like particularly to thank Brian for providing us a very thought-provoking program this evening on where we go from here with GPSs and what some of the issues that surround them and how they fit into our lives are. I'd like to thank all of you for listening, and please mark Tuesday Topics as a point of interest in your lives, not on your GPS.
To participate in the recording of Tuesday Topics, we invite you to join us on Tuesday evenings in the U.S. at 9 p.m. Eastern. That's Wednesday at 1 hour Universal. The program is recorded in the Our Place Politics chat room at ourplace.acbradio.org. That's ourplace.acbradio.org. All you need is a microphone that is plugged into your computer sound card. A few minutes before each program begins, those who are online will be happy to assist with audio checks and to answer questions about the chat room software. An announcement about the show, including information about the topic and the guest speaker, will be emailed to the ACB Radio Friends List. So we hope you will come and join us each week on Tuesday, when Tuesday Topics is being recorded. We'll look for you in the Our Place Politics chat room at ourplace.acbradio.org. Tuesday Topics is a production of ACB Radio Mainstream.